Welcome to CEO Power Talk, a space where C-level executives share their personal and corporate mission, their vision, and strategies acquired to hold the highest ranking position in their organization. Our mission is to develop a collective network of change agents that provide access to resources and opportunities for all leaders. I am your host, Laura C. Bullock, and I'm very excited to be with you today. As a strategic coach, I believe the only way for us to create the life we want is to break through the barriers that paralyze us and challenge the status quo, stand firm in the life that we want. I would like to introduce to you today my two very special guests on a special show that we have in store for you. We will have a reflective discussion about the legacy and trailblazing work of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She is still an inspiration, a role model, and a jurist of high integrity, and she has left us a legacy that has opened the doors of women all over the world. And those women include two of my special guests today. My first guest on the panel is Mrs. Lori Battaglia, CEO of Aligned at Work, a thought leader, writer, speaker, and transformer of people, cultures, and workplaces. Lori has created the created Align for Life model, which combines the elements of vocation, relationships, finances, well-being, and spirit into an integrated work-life model that brings alignment of mind, body, and spirit. And my second guest today is Ms. Celeste Duckworth, CEO of Vertical Alliance International, a social enterprise whose mission is to educate, uplift, and enhance social change through inspired thinking. A visionary leader that sees the patterns of relationships and believes that the capacities to form them are more important than the tasks, functions, roles, and positions. Ladies, welcome to CEO Power Talk. How are you this evening?
Doing well. How are you?
Thank you.
I'm doing great,
yeah,
Lori.
Thank you for having us today.
Yes, thank you. You know, I tell you, before we get started, I really just want to take a moment and ask each of you to share with us the great work you are involved in and why you said yes to participate on this panel talking about the great RBG, as I want to refer to her. So, Lori, I'll start with you. Share with us a little bit about what the work you're doing and why you said yes to participate on this panel.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, Aligned at Work works with leaders who really believe in balancing people and profit, because for a long time I've seen a swaying either the one way or the other. But I believe we have to bring humanity into the workplace, and that it's my calling to do that. Lately, we've been doing an awful lot of diversity, equity, and inclusion conversations. We've always worked on creating inclusive leaders through our leadership work, but it's taken a more specific turn, and it's taken a turn into anti-racism work. So I really enjoy feeling like I'm trying to change the world. So it's good work. It's fulfilling and all that. For as far as this conversation tonight, well, I think I've been a feminist since way back in the late 70s when I started working for a female boss that sort of was my great awakening. And I think that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was certainly somebody that led the cause in that and just didn't understand why women weren't equal to men, which is where I've always been as well.
Yes, yes. I agree with you on that. And I think a lot of female leaders out there are really benefiting from some of the trailblazing work that she's done. And so, Celeste, I'll turn to you and ask you the same. Share some of the great work that you're doing and why you said yes to participating on this panel tonight.
Well, you know, some of the work that we're doing for the Alliance, we started with always helping individuals by introducing them to innovative and creative people. Part of one of our pillars is the Woman on the Rise program. And we started that program because we wanted to interview women who actually had left corporate America. I was one of those women who had left corporate America. but we wanted to get in touch to see what they were doing when it came to pursuing their passions. A lot of women at my time, and I know I did when I left corporate America, it was because we weren't treated fairly. We weren't being treated fairly by the all-male upper management, and there were very few women that were in upper management when I was working. In fact, there was none in upper management. We were all either general managers or we were safety managers. So Women on the Rise was a very special program for me because then it also not only helped me, but it helped a lot of women see what it was taking for them to make those exit plans, what it was costing them to pursue their passion, how they were overcoming some of the things they were going through. And, I mean, one of the things that I admired about Ruth Bader was Ginsburg was that her ability and perseverance. And I think that for women, that's two key things for us, okay? Ability to persevere is just, it has to be amazing when I've heard some of the stories of what women went through just to get to the point of pursuing their own passion. I'm like, wow, some women, I wonder if they realize how really strong they are inside when, it comes to leaving your job or, even if you're a housewife and your kids have gone to college and you're by yourself and you decide to strike out and start your own business, that takes a lot. One of the things that I loved about Ruth Bader Ginsburg is that she was one of the first, even though she wasn't one of the first women to the Supreme Court, she brought with her the ideal of women being treated the same as men in everything. Mm-hmm. And even though, she was an originist, when she looked at the Constitution for her, it was like, okay, even though this was written so many years ago, there were certain parts of it that the mindset wasn't really written for women, okay, right. Minorities, but the interpretation was not, the interpretation could be, well, yeah, this was written for everybody. So now we got to just make that, we had to change some of the things. And so she dedicated her life to that. And so my dedication and my business is really the same thing, but even, when you would say for us, it's like, let's make connections with women, minorities, other cultures, because when you really look at it, for me being in the magazine business, we have the same dreams and goals. We really have the same dreams and goals. If you take the time to sit down and talk to somebody on the other side of the world, you'll realize that we have the same goals. And so our mission is to change that narrative of media and show people that we have the same goals, we have the same dreams, and that my ideal may not be good here, but maybe my ideal will be good in another country.
You know, that's some amazing work, and that's a huge mission in demographics, right? So if we're talking about changing the narrative, globally, I love watching that happen over time. And so as we talk about the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I heard in an interview last night that she wanted to be remembered as someone who left the world a better place than when she found it. So my question to both of you is, do you feel her mission was accomplished? Lori, I'll start with you.
Well, yes, and yet. it's one of those things where, how many steps forward and then steps backwards. So I feel like if I go back and look at when I entered my very first teller job in 1978, I was coming out of factory work and retail and that kind of thing, and being at home for a bit with my son. Boy, we've come a long way. On the other hand, we have so much further to go, and there's so many things embedded in our systems that lead to inequality that, yes, she advanced the bar considerably, and yet we have to pick that up and keep it running.
Yes. Yeah. I definitely agree with you. And when you started with your response, you said yes and yet. And I thought, gosh, Kim, will we ever get there?
I don't know.
Do you think we'll ever get there?
No, not until our culture evolves as a culture. And I don't think that'll be in our lifetime. I thought by now, you know, I'm pretty optimistic, and I thought by now that we wouldn't be having these conversations in the age of my granddaughters that are 14 and 17, and yet here we are. And I'm concerned about backsliding on rights for women and rights for everybody. I'm really concerned about that.
Yes. And so, Celeste, I would ask you, do you feel that her mission was accomplished? She wanted to be remembered as someone who left the world a better place than when she found it, which was 1933, I believe, is when she arrived.
Oh, so, absolutely. She,
yeah,
absolutely. She, you know, she bought five, there were six cases she brought to the Supreme Court in the 70s. That actually, I don't think people realize they really did change the face of the country, in the form of advancing the rights of women. That was very profound, and it's a little sad to me that nowadays that they're not really in tune to some of these great strides. It's easy for people to forget our history, and someone who has been a really big part of history. That one thing that she wanted to do before she passed away was very small compared to everything she did when she was as the Supreme Court Justice. And she accomplished something every step of the way, way. I'm really inspired when I read about what she's done. I'm very inspired. I know that, I would say, as some people could say, they'll, you know, my kids will say that I'm kind of a no-nonsense person and I don't get too hung up on a lot of distractions. But, you know, when I read these kind of stories and I know these people and I read about them and I read about their life, and I think to myself that, wow, what a great legacy and what is a great thing to follow, because, just think of it. You win five of the six cases you present to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Just in the 1970s. You know, she's made other strides since the 1970s, but something that changed the face of the country, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And her methods was great, too, because – you know, her method was not, you know, what most people would think. Her method was, hey, you know what, she was friends with Justice Scalia, you know, and it was kind of like her method was like, well, you know, we have these things in common. What do we have in common? You know, I may disagree with you, but I'm going to make sure you're going to walk away from this seeing my point of view.
Yeah,
you know, and she did it in such a great way, you know, so it made me think that, you know, for a lot of us, some of us can take great lessons from that. We can take great lessons of how she worked with people. We could take great lessons in the cases that she won and what it meant to us, as women in some of the cases. I mean, one of the cases that she won for me as a minority woman, for me, you know, we didn't, you know, we didn't grow up with thinking that, oh, I'm going to be a lawyer. I mean, I was kind of like in that little generation where your mom was like, you know, you good if you get married and have kids. Okay, you good. Good. Okay. or either you went to school and you was a secretary, or even better, you was a nurse. Okay. But but then, you know, I'm right on the cusp where I was like, I don't like none of that. So I just kind of forged my, you know, my own way. But, you know, so the jobs I took were like, you know, I worked for Greyhound at one point. You know, I went into Greyhound, they hired me. I'm like, okay, I'm going to work for Greyhound. I worked construction for a lot. So one of the things that she fought for was the right for women to be able to work those jobs and get the same benefits. Okay.
Yep.
Where we weren't really getting the same benefits, you know, and I remember being on one of the jobs and I was like, the jobs they gave us was really menial. Okay. They sent us to school and then they gave us the job that sucked. Okay. That was the one that you stand in the middle of the road with a flag. All right. And you're like, I just got through going through 6 weeks of school where y'all just tortured us. And then I'm going to stand out here with a flag. Okay. But the beauty of it was that if someone hadn't fought in court for me to have the same rights as the men, I wouldn't have been getting paid $20 an hour. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's what my boss told me. When I told my boss, I'm like, man, we went to school. Why am I standing out here 8 hours with a flag? He said, but you're getting paid $20 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Which is a lot.
I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. What was a lot? That was a lot in the time that I was working. Okay. That was really a lot. There was only four of us in the union.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay. So, you know, those are some of the things that she fought for. You know, we had great advantage. A lot of us women had great advantage to some of those, and we don't even realize it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
Yeah, we don't really realize it.
I think we don't realize it because we don't pay tribute to those achievements as it impacts us today. And, you know, as I was doing some reading and really listening to the stories of people that worked with her, that walked with her, that was on her on these part of these journeys that she was on, you could tell her fingerprints were on everything. It was fingerprints were touching every part of our lives, whether it was workplace discrimination, sex discrimination, or just laws in general that were challenging all of those various inequities, not only of women, but the inequities between men and women, because there were some situations where she was fighting for the rights of men too. And she did that, or it was one of those. Oh, and by the way, since I'm fighting for women, it must also apply to men because they were having difficulties being accepted as single parents, right?
Right.
And widowers to women who pass away, they were having trouble getting benefits of a widow or a widower. So she inevitably fought for both inequities for both men and women, which I thought was really pretty important. So, Lori, I want to ask you, have you seen how these laws have manifested in the workplace where you can, where you're doing some of that important work? Have you seen where these inequities have been, or I should say the wrongs have been right now because of some of the laws or some of the work that Justice Ginsburg has done?
Yes. I think we've come a long way. There are companies like, I believe it was Salesforce. I don't have it right in front of me, so if I've got it wrong, you know, forgive me. But I believe it was Salesforce that has gone back, and as they have taken on new companies, they go back and level the playing field for men and women every single time, which has cost them a lot of money because it typically involves bringing some women, you know, in bulk up to the standard that men are at. Now, having been a working and running with a lot of breadwinner women, I know that it's not always skewed that way. There are those of us that have made more than spouses and more than men that worked with us. But overall, when you look at it, it's still up 80 some cents on the dollar toward women. And worse if you're a little bit better than that if you're an Asian woman, a lot worse than that if you're Black or you're Latina or, heaven forbid, Indigenous. They've really got it low as far as the stats go with the equal pay. But there are companies out there that are trying to do the right thing, that are trying to level the playing field. I think the iteration we're in right now, and I think she would have been right there fighting for this, is that we have to dismantle our systems, take a look at everything, and see what's packed in there. We took for granted it's just the way things are and the way things are supposed to be.
And I think as we continue to observe these companies that are attempting to right some of those wrongs or bring some equity to those imbalances, I think we'll see more of that as we go. But I think one thing that was really interesting is they talked a lot about, some of the laws that she was creating and bringing forth in some of her early years in working with the ACLU, she talked about the breadwinner versus the homemaker model, right? And that's why I'm saying how some of those laws that she had impacted both men and women, because men were not able to be home and be homemakers.
Right,
right.
But then
right.
women weren't able to be seen as the breadwinners. So she had to create balance on both sides of that, and make sure that, you know, as she was constructing this fight, that it really, in order for it to be just, it had to really take on both sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, Celeste, are you share one of your most memorable moments where you feel the legal success of Justice Ginsburg has benefited you and your business?
Well, I think it's benefited me in the sense of, you know, it's allowed me a lot of opportunities in the sense that when you think about, I hear a lot of people say, well, you know, I was not able to get a job because I didn't have a degree. And I think that I didn't really have those issues. When I look at some of the cases that Justice Ginsburg has fought, I would say that, you know, there's a couple. One of them is just being able to have the right to, you know, get the same benefits as men on some of the jobs when it comes to, you know, when I'm not working. Okay. When I think about the one that allows us to get the same benefits for all the times I worked jobs that were like non-traditional women roles.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, just the going into some companies, and this is kind of interesting, is that I work for a lot of big organizations. And it was funny, someone asked me before, well, you know, how did you get in there without a degree? I did not get my degree till after I left corporate America. So a lot of the men were promoted into managerial positions without a degree. I would say most of the women did have at least a college degree, and some had, you know, a high school degree, but some of the men had nothing. They came straight from wherever into management without a degree. I do think that some of the things that she fought for in the 70s allowed us to be able to get some of those jobs. Now, it was still hard. I mean, some of the things you still had to go and fight for. When I was leaving my job, they were like, well, you know, you should go to EEOC. And I'm like, okay. But the thing about when you went to fight some of these things, they didn't want you to fight for gender equality. Okay, so when I went in there and I said, I'm the only female safety director not getting paid like the men's safety directors, and I'm the most overqualified one, okay, they didn't want to hear that. They wanted us to file a discrimination suit based on race. But race wasn't the issue. Gender discrimination was the issue. Yeah, that was the issue. And so the cases that she fought, they had to do with gender, you know, equality, are the ones that helped us keep our jobs, you know, and get the same benefits. Like you were saying, men, you know, some men, when their spouse had died, they couldn't get their Social Security benefits.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And so, you know, and then because of the view that the men had that made these laws, you know, sometimes we had a harder fight to get some of the benefits that we want to. So I say that, you know, definitely I have benefited. I would say that I benefited more from what she has done as a justice than I have from anything else that's out there, like EEOC I'm getting a blank here, but or any of the other affirmative action type things. Okay, I would say that I got benefited from that because I could go in there and say that, you know, hey, this is wrong, you know, and actually, you know, I ended up quitting that corporation because of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I said, it was kind of a thing that if I'm not going to be able to fight for the truth here, you know, being in D.C. and say that because it really is gender discrimination of what you're doing, you know, then I'm not going to fight it. You know, I was not going to use race discrimination based on race when it was really gender discrimination. It was gender discrimination in pay. It was gender discrimination in just how they did things there, you know. So I would say that just those things that she fought for that were really, really, you know, can you even believe that they were still going on in the
70s?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. But so.
Right into the 70s. Yeah.
Yeah. So my goal is to really keep educating women. A lot of times I find myself when I'm on social media educating people and say, no, that's not true. Let's go here. Let's go back here where this is where this started at. Okay. A lot of my time is I'm breaking, you know, I'm tearing down stereotypes, and, you know, sometimes I have to get off of there. I'm like, look, you don't have all day to be doing this, but that's kind of my mission. That's the part about changing the narrative, you know, in our magazine, because people need to know, you know, you need to know that wherever you got this from is not true. Okay.
Right.
You need, and there's, and, you know, even, you know, I just am so inspired by her dedication all these years and the work that she's done.
Yeah.
And just, you know, the how she has really improved people's lives, women's lives and men's lives by her, you know, persistence and pursuing that one issue.
And she kept going literally to death. She just kept going. I mean, the health issues and things and the family issues and everything with her husband having cancer and her having cancer multiple times. And she just kept doing it. I mean, there was a calling there and a mission to be accomplished. And she just let it drive her.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that brings me to one of her favorite quotes that I like. And Lori, it speaks directly to what you're saying is, and one of her quotes is, fight for the things that you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you. And boy, did she bring people along with her.
Yes,
she did. She really
talk about that a little bit, Lori.
I just think, you know, I went back when I was reading all the tributes to her and everything on Facebook when she died. It was just amazing to think, and I've seen the movies and things like that, and tonight I pulled up the quotes and things. She just had a way of, I mean, and you think about it, this woman was, what, not even 5 foot tall, probably? And oh, my goodness, like a little whirlwind. It just reminds me of I feel like, and she didn't look like she moved quickly in her older years, but you just were drawn into that vortex of good things happening and change happening and stuff. So somehow people followed her. And women definitely, most women, not everybody, I'm sure, got behind her and really admired what she stood for. So she was really, like you said, Celeste, she reached her hand across the aisle multiple times in multiple ways. Did not divide us. I wish I were that good. You know, I've got my foibles. I will drop the F-bomb multiple times and divide sometimes rather than unite. I don't get that vibe from her, you know? It's like everybody gets their own following, I guess.
Well, and I think, you know, when you have a lot of history on your side and a lot of achievement on your side, and people can see the benefit, their personal benefits of those achievements, it's hard to not follow that. Right.
True.
It's almost as if, you know, the testimony has to, like, as you called it, it's a vortex, right? It pulls you in and you have nothing to do but follow. And so when you have people that are speaking such powerful language and talking about such powerful success stories, you have to follow. Right. And you follow because of the way they lead.
Yes.
And that is so important. So tell me about in your workplace where you're doing a lot of consulting and a lot of training. What are you seeing in leaders today that resembles a little bit of this tenacity that Justice Ginsburg had?
Well, I think everybody's resilience has really been tested this year, you know, with the sudden and that changes and how our lives, most of us, were changed in some way, some more radical than others, and heaven forbid those people who have lost people to COVID-19 or became
yes.
sick and the ongoing effects and things. But so leaders are, where we see the struggle mostly is that right now, if you're not essential or you don't work in retail or whatever, so I deal with a lot of people that work in offices, most of those people are still at home, or they might be a little bit in the office, but mostly at home, where they are still struggling because school districts, some have gone back and some haven't. And that affects both genders, women more than men, we're finding, and women are quitting mm-hmm. the workplace actually in droves right
yes.
now because of, yeah, all of that. Kids, parents have been taken out of elder care in some cases because people weren't happy with that. So leaders are struggling,
mm-hmm.
I think, to figure out how to lead in this different environment where they're expected to balance all of that, to be more vulnerable. You know, there's an old leadership style that probably the three of us on this phone grew up with, the don't let them see you sweat, don't show any
right.
vulnerability, that's a lot of weakness. And what we're learning is, no, it's courage takes vulnerability, resilience takes vulnerability. You have to be able to bounce with this stuff and pivot faster than you ever did before. And so it's just leaders getting their arms around all of that and figuring out, when do I be compassionate with my worker who, you know, my team member who really has an awful lot of stuff going on in their family because maybe they've got two toddlers at home or a toddler and a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they've got kids with special needs. There's just so many things
mm-hmm.
that we take for granted that our schools are going to be there to take care of that for us, and they're not.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes.
So,
yeah. you know,
it's all of that.
Go ahead.
All of that.
Yeah.
It's just all of that coming together at once is what they're struggling.
It's interesting that you said the courage, because one of the pillars of CEO Power Talk is leadership courage. And so we
mm-hmm.
talk about that in the sense that, you know, we have to have the courage to step outside of whatever is comfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know Brene Brown talks a lot about vulnerability and being able to, you know, persevere through vulnerability. But I know that leadership courage is even greater because we can lead. And I love that you brought up that old leadership style of never let them see you sweat. We can lead that way.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
but what are we really demonstrating to future leaders?
Yeah.
Right. That the wave is always high. You know, there's never any dips
mm-hmm.
in the wave. It's always high, and you have to always be thriving in that way, and it never shows any kind of balance. So I really think that that's important to bring up right now, because without that leadership courage, we're not going to see the type of leadership styles that will persevere in this and endure in this time. And we have to be able to lead as an example with that courage to say, you know what, this is a difficult time. Yes, we are struggling.
Yeah.
And so I know you're talking a lot about that workplace environment. I know that a lot of these non-essential people are still home. Are you finding
mm-hmm.
companies still reaching out to you for this type of support, this type of training, this type of development that is necessary, even in a virtual work situation?
Yeah, it's been interesting because my husband has risk factors for COVID, so I've made it clear that I'm not going out in person. And
mm-hmm.
we've been able to do, like, for example, let's say your team is pulling apart in a time like this, which might have been there before COVID, but now with COVID on top of it, it makes it even worse, and people aren't in the office together and everything. We've been able to actually do that work virtually. You have to really chunk it down into small chunks. You have to give people longer breaks, and keep it interactive. And even then, realize that they're probably multitasking. Try to keep them as focused as possible, put them in small breakout rooms. There's techniques that we use for that. And
mm-hmm.
then, like I was saying, an awful lot of diversity and inclusion work, and that's all being done virtually as well. So it's all possible. We have to, I heard somebody say early on when I was listening to every webinar I possibly could about how do you switch it up virtually? How do you make things interesting? And I've been using Zoom for a long time, but so initially you think like, I got this. And then you realize, oh, maybe I don't got this. And, you know, mm-hmm, I listened to everything. Mm-hmm. This one guy said, and I think this is a metaphor for this whole time, he said, rather than us taking what we used to do in a classroom or a team alignment session or something like that and saying, how do we convert that to virtual, why don't we look at it and say, what can we do on virtual that we never did, we couldn't do in person? And
oh,
I was like,
that. Whoa.
Yeah. And I'll give you a simple example that he used that I, because, you know, first you can't get your head around it. You're like, yeah, well, like what? And he said, if you're on Zoom and they, you know, on Zoom we all have our names up usually, or in a lot of cases these days you get your kid's name up because they need to have it up for school and you're borrowing their laptop or something. So he said, you could gather feedback anonymously by having them go in and change their name to just a period. Well, now we all unmute ourselves to go. And so you can say, what do you think about that? And people can weigh in, and you don't have a clue where it's coming from. And that's something
that is funny. Cool,
like, huh?
That is funny.
Yeah. So you know, that's our world these days. It's like, what's coming next? What do we need to switch up? And
right.
I kind of thrive in that ambiguity, so that's a good thing for me in some ways.
That's
a little
good.
Draining, though. Yeah.
What about for you, Celeste? What are you seeing, you know, in this area of leadership courage? What are you seeing out in the community that, as you're, you know, providing support to small business owners and independent consultants that are working, that you're supporting, what are you seeing in terms of leadership courage?
Well, I'm, you know what, actually, I've ended up being more of a consultant for a couple of my clients that are having a hard time adjusting to the virtual part, which, you know, they're still very hands-on, even though I really love to encourage a lot of my clients to do some things. You know, there's more things they can do virtually than they think, you know. And a lot of them do have a desire. So I found myself training more people. I've been virtual for over 15 years that I've done virtual work. And actually, you know, I learned to be more virtual when I was living in Ireland because the people there weren't in fear of doing things virtually. Okay. You know, there were a lot of companies that did a lot of things virtually. And so that's kind of where I got that from. And then when I came here, even though there were a lot of companies that were doing the virtual, they were doing the work at home. It's a little bit different than virtual. Okay. They were doing the work at home because a lot of businesses were saying, we're not going to pay for that high, you know, leasing of offices and whatnot. How many employees can we, you know, do virtually, but it's still a little bit different. Now it's a little bit different now because like you said, mothers are having to be moms, wives,
yeah,
and work at home. Okay.
Teachers.
And be everything else at home. So like, yeah. So it's like, you know, it's kind of like when I babysit my grandkids, it's kind of like, you're not just the babysitter. You're the cook, the babysitter, you're the playground, you're everything. Okay. So, you know, so I can imagine the moms that are, you know, in fact, there was just a thing on CBS about mothers that were having a hard time and being discriminated or being treated poorly by their jobs because they had to work virtually and they had to watch their kids, you know.
Right.
And being really heartless about it, some of the employers being heartless about it. So for me, I've been training a lot of individuals on how you can go virtual. A lot of people have done very well. I would say they were able to make that switch very easy. There's a lot more, you know, who would have known that Zoom would be one of the, you know, things of choice vendors of choice to go to this virtual. I mean, God, I mean, his stocks must have went up just about in 3 months, okay, with everything that was going on with the COVID and all the schools and everything. And it was, I know he was like, wow. But, you know, being in the right place at the right time, okay. With the right product. So I would say for me, what I've learned, though, during this thing, what I found out is that there are a lot of companies that really didn't make the crossover really well. And I was saying that some of these companies, big companies, you know, now I know every year in October, that is our year to do replanning for Vertigo, anything we want to change. I mean, October is the month. So I'm like, some of these businesses should be doing the same thing. They should always be reevaluating, and they should be ready for this kind of a change. This has been a huge game changer for a lot of companies. Believe me, a lot of companies are realizing, oh, yeah, you know, this is where we can have our employees work at home. We don't necessarily need this. A lot of people, like Lori said, a lot of people realize I don't have to go back to that job.
Right.
Okay, and they found other things to do. They actually found other things to do. So, but I found that I learned that there was a lot of people I work with, a lot of companies I work for that really wasn't prepared for this. Okay, and they weren't. And the changeover was very hard for them, and it cost us a slowdown in the sense that because we had to wait for them to catch up to us.
Yep.
You know, in order to you know make things work. So we did have a time with that, you know, because of that. So, but very much so, I very much so believe that there was a lot of opportunities that came out of this year. You know. A lot of opportunities came out of the year. A lot of people did discover good jobs. I hate social media. I mean, I don't hate it, but I love my friends on it. But there's some people in some of the social media I just don't need. But I got invited to the Nextdoor app. And the Nextdoor app is actually kind of cool. Okay, so at first I was like, okay, people are gonna be dinging me every day. But it's not really like that. What I loved about it was that there's about 25 neighborhoods in our community, okay, and everybody's on there. So some days it's so hilarious. Some days, but what's great is that you know the people are real. They talk about real things like, hey, I'm going shopping. Does anybody need anything that can't get out the house? Or they'll say, hey, there's a job over so-and-so. Or they'll say, hey, I do babysitting. Does somebody want to share? I mean, I saw a lot of that. Okay, I was like, man, I really like my neighborhood. Okay, I was like, they were really doing some stuff. They were like, they were reporting all the dogs that got away. You know, hey, you lost dogs out here. Let's take a picture. They're like, alert. Hey, there's a coyote over at so and so. So it was just. But some days it got when the man's peacock got lost. Everybody, it was just hilarious. The whole feed was hilarious about that. But so it was really a very uplifting thing. During this whole COVID and people learning how to be, you know, virtual. So it was actually, and we have our conversations and I think I'm getting more out of the next door, 25 neighborhoods. I'm not sure how many people of people because we're able to have better conversations about what's going on,
I think if nothing else, COVID has really taught us the value of human connection.
Right. Yes. Actually, yes. Mm-hmm.
We took it for granted. We took it for granted, and when it was taken away from us, we went into all kinds of shock. And so we had to get very creative on how we brought back the human connection, because that drove everything. And you can see it through all of the businesses that are kind of reinventing themselves. They're reinventing themselves based on the desires and the necessity of human connection. It's in all of their advertising. Mm-hmm. It's in all of their rebranding. It's in all of their commercials. So I think that's really cool. And I think, you know, when we talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I think one of the things that I didn't know, and I'm going to challenge you and say, did you know that in addition to her being a women's rights activist and a Supreme Court justice, that she was a legal and pop culture icon, of course, but she was a heroine of children's books. And she really loved Halloween costumes for babies and adults. She was the star of her own coloring book.
Uh-huh.
And she was the subject of a documentary film called The Notorious RBG.
Well, I did
I
know
did
the coloring
know
book part.
That part was new.
Yeah.
I did not know she wrote children's books.
I did
either. So that's a good kind of tidbits about her. And so this pop culture icon part of her life came very late in life. And I think I read it was in just 2013. So it wasn't, you know, when she was about 80 years old, no, 70 years old, New York NYU law student started a Tumblr account because she was so disappointed in a case, and the Shelby court case, which was the court case that had a negative impact on the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
And
she
was so, the student was so upset, she started this Tumblr account, and she dubbed her a icon, a pop culture icon, saying she was so small in size, but she was a trailblazing force that was so inspiring to her. And folks began to dub these names, come up with these names for her. And the Notorious RBG was just hilarious. When I read about that, it was so comical to me. And she wore that name with a badge of honor.
She really did.
So what are your thoughts about that? What are your thoughts about this pop culture icon that also sat on the Supreme Court bench?
I think what was great about it, but what I got from that was that she was just a woman like everybody else. She had a family.
Yeah.
She was a grandmother. She was a mom. All the things that we were doing, and this what makes it even better when you realize, and she's fought these cases, and that what makes it better is that she wasn't just someone sitting on the bench; she's someone that actually lived it, you know.
Yeah.
And she was living all of it. She was living it, even you know, through her kids. She's living it through school. So you know, she is. It's very different when someone is just, you know, away from their constituents, you know, so to speak. It's very different when someone's actually living it. And so you can say she has probably talked to a lot of people that were going through things in her own neighborhood, you know, in her own church with her own children, with her own grandchildren, you know.
Yeah.
I thought that was actually cool because that's the human side that you normally don't get to see. And that's kind of some of the things that we do at Vertical is like when we interview celebrities, we're not going to even talk about the gossip. We don't talk about the gossip. We talk about what's the real thing. We just did an interview talking about who are the real power. And we said, are the power couples really about money and status and what you can do? Or are the power couples the ones that know how to fix dinner while the other one getting the kids done or chasing the kids around while the other ones, who are the real power couples? And we wanted to get different couples, celebrities, and just, you know, and other people and say, so how do you handle it?
Yeah.
How do you handle it? You know? So I thought it was really cool when, you know, when the book you're talking about, she had a book that with her, I think it was her grandson that did something, but I thought it was cool when you were reading about the grandkids and they were like, my grandma was cool. Okay. I got to see grandma. Okay. So I really love that because I love it when my kids think, you know, my grandkids, I love it. They think I'm cool. Okay. My motto when we go places is what happens with grandma, stay with grandma. Okay.
That's right.
They love
that's
that
right.
Every time. Yeah. When we get in the car, I'm like, what's the rule? They say, what happens with grandma, stays with grandma. So it made me feel even better about she took a lot of that wisdom and that for real wife, mother, grandmother wisdom with her, into work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, she really
what
did.
What about for you, Lori? How does that resonate with you as we talk about this pop culture icon that also sat on the bench?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. And I think that the older we get, you know, like I've always kind of made fun of myself. So if somebody else is poking fun, if they're doing it for fun and not at my expense to be cruel, I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the great things about COVID is that I got really tight with my next door neighbor. So I'm the honorary mom, grandmom, and Joe is the honorary, you know, grandpa and stuff. And if they need to do something for us and they want to refer to us as elderly, I'm 64, you know, that's cool. Whatever they need to do to get us, you know, we joke back and forth a lot. And I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg was like that. But I want to riff off of something that Celeste said about power couples. I was hoping at some point tonight we would talk about the Ginsburgs' marriage, because I think they are a role model for, you know, gender roles be damned, and we just get it done. You know, we get it done however we get it done. And I go back to when I read the book Lean In, whether you love it or hate it, I liked it. Sheryl Sandberg made the comment at one point that if we choose to partner up with somebody, that is the biggest career move that we will make. Because if you've ever been with somebody who brings you down, or, you know, I'm watching somebody who's in my life that's actually a daughter of a friend from childhood, who's commenting on her ex-marriage for Domestic Violence Month, Awareness Month. And I'm like, oh my God, she's describing exactly what I used to live with, the drama, the craziness, all that kind of stuff. I've gone through that. And now I have this man that supports me no matter what. And that often means that he takes care of the hearth and home. And I go out and do the stuff that used to be men's work or things men did while the wife stayed home. We've got the opposite. You know, our joke is, as long as I take care of the money, he's a happy camper. And as long as he cooks, I'm a happy camper. And, you know, the rest is so, you know, it's all good. But I think the Ginsburgs had that kind of relationship, you know, way back when.
Absolutely, yeah.
You did steal my transition. And so we were going to talk about we are going to talk about the power couple of the Ginsburgs. And so you began to have this conversation about the fact that it was, you know, all the norms were out the window right there with them, right?
Yeah.
And so talk about that a little bit more and just share some of the things that you observed, and what of those things make you feel like they were a power couple? What are those elements that you witnessed through either reading or learning of her and learning of their marriage as they were together, or their partnership? Because I always heard it called a partnership, right?
Not so much
a marriage. And so that in itself is another one of those examples that she took with her relationship as she did with some of her legal work, right? Instead of saying, she would say gender versus man or woman, right? So she took those particular stances where it was very noticeable, and those things transcended what she was doing. So talk a little bit more about what you saw through this couple's eyes, or through your eyes on this couple.
I think it was the movie that was out about her, and I can't remember which one it was, whether it was RBG or A Matter of Sex. I can't remember. They're both good movies. And they kind of held the mirror up to the marriage. And what occurs to me as I think about it is that they were equal partners, and that meant just getting it done. And so when he had cancer, she would literally live on a couple of hours of sleep a night, because she'd go to all his classes, scribe notes, go to her own, come home, you know, basically feed it to him so that he could consume this and stay up abreast with what was going on. And then same thing with kids and stuff. And apparently she wasn't a good cook, and the kids and him would joke about that. And, you know, but in those days it was expected that one would be, if one was female, you know, you better learn to cook, but not everybody could or did or wanted to. But they were just a marriage of equals. And I think that a lot of times marriages in ours, for example, I take on many more of the traditionally male roles, and my husband takes on much more of the traditional female roles of keeping the house going and all of that. And he's always been happier there. And I am always happier when I'm at work than I am when I'm doing housework and things like that. That's what works for us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's really important that we can have those conversations and remove the stereotype of what traditions look like, because we do have to operate where we're best, where we're most happy, right? Where there's more joy for us. And if we can find that sweet spot, oh my goodness. So let's talk a little bit about that from your perspective. I know that, you know, the traditions and the things of a power couple, and you were speaking to that a little bit, you know, share a little bit more of that conversation with our guests.
Well, let me tell you this, that there was, when I was reading about her and her husband, and she, one of the things that I thought was great was that through it all, she said even when she met him at 18, he always thought she was just as important as he was. Whatever they were doing, he thought it was just as important as what he was doing. So there was a cute little thing that she said, that she stayed up all night one time working on legal briefs, and she said that she got a call from the school, and the school and her response to, she got a call about her son, what it was, school. And she said her response was, "This child has two parents, please alternate calls. It's his father's turn."
Love it.
I thought that was so cute when she, I thought that was the most hilarious thing to tell the school. You know, it's like, hey, we're co-parents. There's not one over the other, you know. And that was pretty much, you know, because I could imagine by the time she became, well, even as a lawyer and as a chief justice, that's a lot of hours. Okay.
Yeah.
It's more than the 8 hours at work. It's more than the time you put on the bench. You're gonna spend nights where you're up all night. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So someone has to value you and respect you enough to understand that, you know, that's what you're doing. I remember when I used to get up late writing, or I used to get up early in the morning. I mean, my favorite time is 3 a.m. Don't ask me why, but it is. And I used to get up. And, you know, and I remember Norman would get up and make me coffee. He wouldn't say anything. He'd just get up, make me coffee, and go sit on the couch or lay on the couch and watch me work. You know, and it was comforting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't have to do that, but it was very comforting to know that, you know, he respected me enough to make me coffee. But he didn't sit there and chat while I was working. You know, he didn't sit there and chat. The funniest thing to happen was I was practicing a poem one time now, and I had to listen to the music over and over and over. I don't know how many times I listened to the music, but it was hilarious, is that, you know, I'm listening to the music. He's sitting on the couch, and we're doing this over and over again. I'm practicing. And then there was one time before I start the music, he starts singing the music. And it was hilarious because it was funny because I was like, oh, he's going to listen to it so much. He knows the song, okay?
He knows the song.
We just both start, and we just both start cracking up laughing, you know. Those, you know, men that are like that it's awesome, okay? It's just men that can say, you know what, she's working late, I'm going to cook dinner. I think that's awesome. You know, that can say that, hey, you're, you know, I'm going to go out here and get the kids. They don't even have to tell you. They just do it. They know that they know that they know. And I think that's great in a marriage, you know. I would say they were two, you know, they had their humorous moments. I would say that, you know, just I think people get too caught up in saying, who's going to do what in a marriage? You know,
I agree.
And I, when Norman told me, oh, I just want you to handle money. He said, I'm not good at handling money. He said, just give me an allowance. I was like, okay. And he said, why are you laughing about that? I said, cause I'm going to give you allowance on the first. And if you spend it on the second, you won't get it, you know?
Oh yeah. I can relate to that one.
Yeah. But we didn't have any arguments about money. He said, "You do that, yep. I can't do that, I'll do this," you know. And he would say, yeah. "I don't know how to work on a car, but I'll get the best mechanic," you know. And I was like, and that was really great for us, you know. So
yeah.
Looking at, you know, the story of her and Marty, and she's very much in love with him, and, you know, people knew they were very much in love. I would say that the whole thing about the co-parenting, she was believed that we're co-parents. She believed in true equality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When men share the responsibility of bringing up the next generation, she said that was true equality for her.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
I love it.
So that was great.
And that couple, I think you're right, Lori. That couple is a real role model for couples who want to get it done and get it done right.
Yeah.
And I think we should continue to highlight that.
It seems to me, too, that, like, one of the things in the leadership model that I have is do as I do leadership rather than, you know, that old do as I say, not as I do, which, frankly, I fall into myself sometimes. But her life was consistent when you look across it. She believed in equality.
Mm-hmm.
They created it at home. They created it, you know, she worked on that at the office. And everything was consistent. It wasn't like, well, yeah, but, you know, she goes home at night and he's the boss. It wasn't like that. It was truly equality, so she could embody what she was talking about. I think that's where she lived, really.
Mm-hmm.
That's
really
amazing.
Good.
That's amazing. And it is definitely, you know, as someone that is, you know, has lost her husband and over years I've really been working to prepare myself to be married again, because that is truly my heart's desire. I do look at those types of relationships as models to say, this is what success can be in a marriage. And so it's definitely a model for me to look at, and I hope for our guests as well. So let me shift our conversation a little bit as we get closer to our time. Let's talk about the vision of your business, and how do you feel the vision of your business has shifted since the passing of Justice Ginsburg? I mean, you know, when we have iconic people that leave us, they usually leave some type of impact on our lives, even if it's just something simple that says, I remember what she does, and let that be a guiding light for me. So tell me, if you think about it for a second, what is your vision? How has your vision shifted, if at all, since you learned of her passing?
Well, mine hasn't really shifted a lot, but I do think that I've done a few things. I've added a few things in my business to really, you know, instead of just saying I would like to do this, I've actually really started doing some things. One of the things that I wanted to do is I learned that from the women that we talked to on Woman on the Rise, a lot of women couldn't sustain themselves while they were working in the business. And it wasn't always a paycheck coming in. A lot of times we don't have a laptop to work on. A lot of times it was just maybe a little bit of money to get them, you know, through the licensing part of stuff, you know. And so we wanted to do a scholarship for that. We wanted to do a scholarship where women could actually, and we wanted to do something that was not based on so much stuff that a person couldn't get a scholarship. We really wanted to be that, you know, this scholarship was designated for maybe a computer, and that you would get a computer. No, you know, not trying to put too many, you know, rules and regulations to get that. So, you know, we kept saying that we were going to do that. And finally, you know, even when she passed away and I was learning about, you know, and I was like, all the things, the perseverance part was really big too, because, you know, we get kind of faint-hearted sometimes because we've been doing something for a long time and we see the vision and we see the big picture. And sometimes we just like, oh my God, I'm on mile 1001. when am I going to get to the end, you know? So,
right.
So I said, well, you know what, you can actually create scholarships now. So which we actually did create a scholarship fund in the sense of our business that does digital media. We do digital media and, you know, websites and everything under that. I said, let's just do a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so we do scholarships. I mean, I've been doing them for a long time, but I said, you know what, let's be more verbal about it. And let's put it on the website that if you don't have enough money for some type of business thing that you're trying to do, that we will support you in giving you some form of scholarship depending on what your need is. That scholarship is in the form of whatever. If you come to us and your project costs $1,500, then we can do a scholarship for $500.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we started implementing. Continuing and persevering to see, you know, our vision has always been to see women and part of the program to see women aspire to do the work they want to do, you know, for women to, you know, pursue their passion. And so that was another part that we always wanted to do and that we actually just started doing it. So, you know, the motto I heard Joyce Meyer said, do it afraid.
Yes.
So I'm actually doing it afraid, you know. And I think even Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when she was doing some of the things that she was doing for women, for women's equality, can you imagine? Sometimes she probably felt alone and sometimes she did it afraid.
I'm sure she did.
So our vision is pretty much the same, but we're actually making more moves to, you know, we're not making excuses to not do some of the things in our vision that we want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. What about for you, Lori?
I think, I thought about, as you asked that question, I thought, you know, the funny thing is gender equality worked for a really long time, and I got tired and I backed off for a while and then I got back in the fight. And then I have trans people in my world. And one of them said to me, you know, gender's not binary. And it was like mind blown, can't go back. Okay, that explains things I've felt and seen over my life that I couldn't put words to. And so I stopped doing the specific gender work, but I've always had an interest in diversity and inclusion. But I would tell myself, well, I don't know that I'm qualified to do that. I'm a white, straight, boomer woman who considers herself an ally. But what do I know what it's like to be a black woman? What do I know about what, you know, so yeah. I would have a lot of reasons I couldn't do it. And I realized that I had been doing it voluntarily with Tisch Times through NAVO for the last 3 years. And Phaedra Earhart, we were a team of three. And Tisch and I actually had an opportunity, or I got an opportunity, networking in an HR type of meeting in a breakout room, hit it off with somebody. They ask us to, you know, do you do this type of, I guess you're really busy, I guess you do this type of work. And I was like, well, we build inclusive leaders, but we haven't gone down the diversity and inclusion specific path. But what we realized is we are uniquely set up for people who want to take that first step. So they're not doing it. They know they need to do something. That's our niche. And, of course, she has her business. I have mine. But we come in together under Aligned at Work. So we don't really mess around with her brand of networking and sales. And it's all corporate. And so that's been a big leap of faith because, like I said, I gave myself a lot of reasons I shouldn't be doing this because there are other more qualified people. One of the things I've said a few years ago is I wish I had the 20-something-year-old me that would ask for whatever she needed and wouldn't sit down and be quiet about it and would just get gutsy again. And I'm really trying to bring that out. And I'll tell you what, LinkedIn, if you're not following some of the young people of color and all over the gender spectrum leaders on there that are not going to sit down anymore and shut up.
Yeah.
It's infuriating.
Yes, I am following them.
Oh,
I am following them.
It is quite something.
I am.
So,
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Yes, you go, girl. So today, and so that's cool. So yeah,
good.
I think we've got to change the world, and I'm giving myself permission to get back to my 20-something-year-old self and go like, let's just go do this, shall we? And
yeah,
you better qualify.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. I love it. I love it. So let me ask you this. As a CEO and a visionary, how do you see the legacy of Justice Ginsburg impacting women in leadership?
Ooh. Wow. It's like she's responsible for so much of what we have now.
Yes.
Her work, the people that she united around her, she is so much at the forefront of where we are now, and I think we owe it to her and to all who came before us, many of whom I've worked with over the years. I think we owe it to those women who have fought long and hard for the equality. I think women leaders owe a lot to those women who were willing to sometimes sacrifice having a family or any kind of a life outside of work. They put up with a lot and they sacrificed a lot and they did a lot of things that rob them of their souls. And I think we owe it to them to just soldier on.
Agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. And what about for you, Celeste? How do you see the legacy that she's left us impacting women in leadership?
Well, definitely, definitely I plan on continuing to impact women in leadership by, pushing forward some of the things that she's done in our magazine. I've been thinking of that in the terms of helping our young ladies in our social enterprise that we're getting ready to work with. So, you know, one of the things that I think I've got from her, and more so, I think we talk about this all the time, but more so how important it is to use wisdom, how important it is to persevere, how important it is that to believe that everyone is not necessarily against you who you work with, okay? We have to learn to work within the environment that we're giving, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that, you know, you stay in there and just get pushed down, but, you know, you have to be brave enough and have courage enough to not allow us to go backward, okay?
Yeah.
And since she passed, I think there's a lot of fear out there about going backward because she was so, she was so pushing onward and forward, you know. And I don't think we have to fear that. I think that there's enough of us to be able to make impacts in our local community and our national community, that we can continue to make those same impacts. For women, we just have to have a desire and the perseverance and the wisdom. And also just know that, you know, just like there were people that she had to work with that had a different opinion, she learned how to work within that different opinion to get what she wanted. You know,
I learned that,
you know, you can work with someone that you don't necessarily agree with. You can have the different views and whatnot, but ultimately, if you have respect for them as a person, you may have respect for them and some of their decisions may not be the same, but you may have respect for how they did it or whatnot. You have to honor that respect, you know, and you'll be surprised at how somebody would come back and choose your opinion because of your attitude. So that definitely those are some of the things I carry forth that I want to. You know, I won't be just posting things or just writing about things. I'm actually, you know, wanting to use some of her examples and say, hey, to our younger people, do you know what this, you know, Jones versus thing, do you know what that meant to your life? And really, I want to put that out there. I want to do more of those type articles to let people know that, you know, in history, there was someone that thought about you. There was someone that thought about your future.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's really powerful.
I almost feel like, you know, my next question, you guys have already given some answers to it, but I want you to think a little bit more, and I want you to offer some CEO tips for our audience. And these tips that might maybe deeply rooted in the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And so, Celeste, I'll start with you.
Okay.
CEO tips.
CEO tips. Okay, CEO tips. That as a CEO, it's not always your way or the highway. Okay, that's a famous thing people say. You have to be willing to learn from everyone you meet. There is something that you take away from every meeting, every person you meet. There is something that you have to open up your head to see what it is a takeaway. Now, you may think there's nothing, but there is something, okay? We are all connected in some kind of way. So I would say that's your first thing. Listen, because there's someone that can teach you something about what you're doing. Every CEO did not become a CEO because they were a good business person. They did not become a CEO because people say, oh, I think they should be the CEO. Okay. A lot of times the CEO was not based on a degree. Okay.
Right.
A lot of times the CEO is not based on the look. Okay. It's based on the genuine value you take in the company that you're working for and the vision you see ahead.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you, Lori. CEO tips for our audience that's deeply rooted in the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back to that thing that I said earlier about being consistent with how you live your life and what you stand for. So really giving a lot of thought as a CEO to what do you stand for and where is the line between you and the company. And sometimes there is one and sometimes there isn't. I run a boutique consulting firm, so the company is me and all the people that I bring into it to do the work that needs to get done.
Right.
But I think it's, you know, decide what you stand for, stand up and take a stand for it.
Mm-hmm.
Make your life's work worth something. Make your legacy worth something. That's become so much more important to me as I get older. And I do see that, you know, it's about next generation workplaces because I'm a boomer and it's not our place anymore. It's everybody else's.
Mm.
And how do we build that bench, build that legacy in there? How do we carry forward? And the generations behind me are so much more interested in doing fulfilling work and having a purpose to that work than I ever thought about. In those days. So I would say just keep
That's
your
amazing.
Ear to the ground and your eye on what's coming behind and lead by example.
Oh, my gosh, that's powerful. So I'll ask both of you, any final thoughts on the legacy that we've been reflecting on tonight of Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Mm-hmm.
Final thoughts, Celeste.
Just, you know, like I said, I'm going to be more thoughtful and, you know, this is our planning month and I'm going to tell you, she made a big impact on me. Okay. And so my, you know, even up to the point of just how she was just trying to persevere to the end and what she's trying to do. So she made a big impact on me where I'm at right now in my company. Okay. So one of my final thoughts is that I'm really going to be, you know, just really not getting caught up in the overwhelming feeling sometimes that you have and really persevere in the things that I want to do for other people and my purpose.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. What about for you, Lori? Final thought.
So I had pulled up some Ruth Bader Ginsburg quotes and I found one that I think really ties it together nicely. And she was known as the Great Dissenter. And so what she said was, dissents speak to a future age. It is not simply to say my colleagues are wrong and I would do it this way. But the greatest dissents do become court opinions and gradually over time, their views become the dominant view. So that's the dissenter's hope, that they are writing not for today, but for tomorrow. And there you have it.
Oh, my goodness, that's powerful. Yes, thank you. Well, I'd like to thank my guest, Lori Battaglia, CEO of Aligned at Work, and Celeste Duckworth, CEO of Vertical Alliance. I'd also like to thank my Power Talk community,
and my marketing team for ensuring our voices are heard, and through CEO Power Talk podcast program. I'd like to thank my partner, Vertical Living Vertical Radio, and you can also follow us on Facebook at CEO Power Talk, as well as Instagram. You can follow our story on CEO Power Talk. You will also be able to listen to the taped program on our YouTube channel that should be up very soon. And my next topic is on October 27th at 6 p.m., where I will be interviewing Shonda Carter, CEO of Showstoppers Productions. Now, if you have not had an opportunity to get your fall book read in, don't forget that you can pick up your copy of my latest book, All Grown Up, The Road Less Traveled. And you can pick that book up on my website at www.lauracbullock.com. Thank you for listening. And this is your host, Laura C. Bullock, and you are tuned in to CEO Power Talk.